Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
This message is entitled No Greater Love. You probably know what direction we're going just with that title. I don't try to make the titles flashy. I run out of titles after about session three, and then it's just figure out what way to repackage the word love. Okay, so focus verse this morning is we're going to look at John 15:13. And so John 15:13 says, greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. This just speaks volumes to the direction that we're going this morning. The way we are to love each other, Jesus gives us like so many layers of conversation here in this phrase. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay one's life down for one's friends. So Jesus identifies this as there's no greater love than this. This is the greatest version of love. This is the pinnacle of what love looks like. Anything else would be in the same vein or would be secondary to this point, to lay down your life for your friends. No greater love. There doesn't exist a better love than this. That's an interesting idea. I mean, as we've been talking about loving one another and trying to figure out how to do that, we can start here as the very pinnacle, as the height of what love looks like, to lay down our life for our friends. Jesus identified it. It's like he's advertising it. He says there is no greater version of love than this. He doesn't leave any room for wondering what is the biggest way to do this, what is the most impacting, what is the most real, what is the most at the core version of love. It's to lay our life down for our friend. I look at this and I see Jesus advertising it as something we can have. I don't know about you, but of course, looking at the context, it makes it a little challenging to want to say this statement. But without the context, I want the great love. I want the greatest love. If Jesus is like, and this is the greatest love, I want that. And then he's like, okay, well, here's what it is. You got to die. Oh, horrid. How did we get here? But this is something that is attainable. The greatest version of love is something you can do and something you can have. There is a way to tap into, to touch, and even, you know, earn the trophy, if you will, for this, what Jesus defines as the greatest love. And it's interesting that he specifically targets it at our friends. There are plenty of places where the subject of love is aimed at neighbor. Subject of love is aimed at people with a pulse, just anybody. Subject of love is aimed at the body of Christ. This one particularly is aimed at friends. He says there is no greater version of love than for you to lay down your life for those that you are closest to. Wow. That makes it impacting. But think about the wisdom of this. If a complete stranger lays their life down for a complete stranger, that's really cool and noble, but it doesn't touch your heart like your friend doing it for you. And that's the reason it's said this way. Jesus said, there's no greater love than for a friend to lay his life down for his friends. I think it's interesting. I don't really know what to do with it, honestly. I can see it either way. But I think it's interesting that there's an S on the end of friend. Friends, plural. Could he have just meant, well, that friend or that friend or that friend? You know, friends. Maybe. Maybe that's what he meant. But I think it's interesting that Jesus didn't lay his life down for a friend. He laid it down for his friends, plural. So the idea of sacrifice in a group setting, the idea of sacrificing for friends, not sacrificing for friend merely. I think you still get the points. You're still going down the road. You're still accomplishing what he's after if you lay your life down for a friend. But what does it look like to lay our life down for our friends? Multiple. It's like, wow, this is These are challenging ideas as far as how to live, what to do with this. We're supposed to be adopting this kind of violent love, to lay our lives down for our friends. It says there's no greater love than this. This is actually the pinnacle. If you do everything else, but you haven't done this, you've not yet touched the greatest thing. This is the absolute most outstanding way to love, to lay our life down. And we're going to dissect that term in a minute, because what does that even mean? I mean, death, but more than that? This is how we know what love is, the Apostle John told us in 1 John 3:16. Look at this. 1 John 3:16. Apostle John, he understands doctrine pretty good. He knows Jesus well. And he says this. He says, this is how we even know what the heck love is. Jesus Christ laid his life down for us. So this is how we can identify what it means to love. This is the definition of it. This is the way we are able to understand what it means, what Christianity is about. Think about this. Christianity all started with a man laying down his life for his friends. So therefore, it makes sense that Christianity would continue to be about laying our life down for our friends. That it wasn't just a one-off moment. It was actually a pattern of ministry. It was a model of life, that we would lay down our lives for our friends. And John says, this is how we know what it is. I mean, sometimes I think we read the Bible and we read verses and we just so spiritualize it, we don't realize this was a human writing words and he just meant what he said. It's like, this is the way we even know what love is. We look at what Jesus did and who he is, and he laid down his life for his friends. Wow. Well, later in that same verse, we find out we also ought to do it. Look at it. It says, Jesus Christ laid his life down for us, 1 John 3:16, and we ought to lay our lives down for our brothers. So this is how we know what love is, and now that we've got that model, now we're supposed to do it. I don't think about this much. Do you? I mean, as you're going throughout your day, do you think, good cheeseburger, I need to lay my life down for my friends? I mean, but this is like real Christianity. This is the meat of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. We ought also to do this. That's just so, like, intrusive. This will really mess up your domestic tranquility. I mean, as long as we think that our lives are about whatever it is that we want and whatever, you know, we're after and our objectives, this isn't touching us. But when we start to recognize we ought to do this, we ought to be thinking about this, we ought to be reaching for this, that is just really, really different. I don't know, I'm challenged by that idea, that this should be kind of bumping around in my brain on a regular basis and not just getting ready for a Sunday morning service that we're teaching on love. Or you get impacted by it in a message and then you walk out and think about it for about 15 minutes and then it's over. We ought to be laying our lives down for one another. I mean, that is like so violent in language. That's not like we ought to try to be a little nicer. We ought to try to be helpful on occasion. We ought to be laying our lives down for one another, for our brothers. Wow. Well, Paul goes after it too. Same idea. This is a common New Testament thought process. This idea of dying for our friends, dying, laying our lives down. Paul says it in Ephesians 5, 1 through 2. He says, follow God's example, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. Follow the example. Christ laid his life down because he loved us. His love was expressed. He laid his life down for us. And as a result of this, here's the part that I want us to catch. Not just that that's the example and we're supposed to follow it. It's that it became a fragrant offering to God. Maybe that can help us with some motivation a little bit. It's not just good. It's not just be a good Christian. It's when we do this, and probably at any level, level 10, as far as you can go, is actual sacrifice of life. But anything on that spectrum, it's a pleasing offering to the Father. One of the things I've been trying to do over the course of the last probably decade of my life in God, I've been trying to think about what I'm doing and not just do it. I've been trying to think about, I'm going to respond this way, and I know you see me and you're pleased with it. Like getting God involved in the conversation. To start to see any level of sacrifice for our brother, any sacrifice, laying down of ourselves for our friend, as something that is extremely pleasing to the Father, that he sees it, he receives it, he breathes that incense in, and it's pleasing to him. I love that picture, because sometimes it's really challenging when you're in a situation and you know the good you ought to do, but you really don't want to do it because it's good for them and it's bad for you. Anybody else? Am I the only one? It's good for them. You know it. You know, man, if I did this, that would make them happy and me really ticked. I would wind up in 3 days of like minor depression over how angry I am that I did that nice thing for them. And it's like, oh my gosh, Lord, help us. Help us to start to see it as laying ourselves down, our lives down for someone else as a pleasing sacrifice that you are looking at and you are so happy about that. We have this lie that we believe that we have to fight to make our life as great as we can. And that's the ultimate of victory. That's the ultimate of success. That's the ultimate of what it means to live your best life now. And the Lord's like, no, it's actually the total opposite. In fact, my son in his prime at 33, he died. He stopped having a life on planet Earth. I mean, it's so counterintuitive. That's so backwards. But we have this perspective that our life is about getting ahead. It's getting more. It's getting more resource, more adulation, more influence, more. It's about getting more. And the Lord's like, no, actually, it's about dying to yourself and giving yourself to exalt another, to help another, to see them better and stronger. Oh my gosh, this is so backwards from how we think. And that when we do that, the Lord goes, oh, I smell that sacrifice. It is beautiful what you just did. You just esteemed yourself before me. Your situation may have decreased in your natural life, in the way that others see you, in the way that you might even see yourself or feel that your life looks. But by doing this, you esteemed yourself before me, a pleasing sacrifice. You ever think about how Jesus did it? How did he go to the cross? Fully God, but fully dude, fully human man. Fully. And he had to make the decision. But he had this revelation, this will be a pleasing, this will make you so happy if I do this for you and if I do this for them. And that revelation and then the fact of it, it was the most pleasing thing that's ever happened in human history. The sacrifice of one laying his life down for his friends. Wow. I'm just really impacted by that. You know, sometimes I wonder why pastors put in random stories that don't really have anything to do with what they're preaching. And I realized, I had this revelation. It's because if the message bombs and it's like really bad, at least there was that one good story. So I'm going to tell you a story that barely has anything to do with what we're talking about today. Because I can. So I'll try to tie it in, but it's going to be weak, okay? All right. So this weekend, or whatever, last few days, we were out of town, family, and one of our friends that we know, they've got some family out kind of in that area of Texas as well, so they were passing through, so we got to spend a little bit of time with them and hear from them. Well, the friend, he's in the FBI, okay? And so he has got the wildest stories of all the different things that happen in his FBI-ing, okay? And so he tells me this story that I was like, dude, that is really funny. He's like, okay, so first of all, he doesn't work in like any of the departments that would wind up having him out in the field doing crazy FBI stuff. He works in like white collar financial crime analyst stuff, okay? So he's totally got a desk job in the FBI. But because of his field office, like he's an agent at the office, every time there's like a big thing that's happening, they come in and they just start looking for humans that have guns on their hips. It's like, everybody in here, you're going out. Let's go. And so there was a situation, this happens on occasion, but I'm just like, my friend is like a pencil pusher, and yet he gets like drafted into these moments, okay? And so he's in this moment, and they're like, listen, we got the situation. We're going to take down four different bad guys all at the same time. They're in four different locations, so we need four different groups, okay, to go to these different locations. And so they're needing like a lot of manpower in order to be able to pull this off because they got to hit four different locations, okay? And so his group is kind of small, and they're looking around the office because they, you know, he gets roped in, and so they're looking around. I mean, they're just looking in the janitor's closet for a guy. I mean, they're looking for anybody, okay? They wind up getting a couple more, and they wind up with like eight dudes on site to try to take out this guy. Well, when they arrive on site, it turns out it's like nearly like an armored compound, okay? And it's like the way that things are set up, and there's security cameras all around. It's like clearly a place that needs to be busted by the FBI. I mean, like everybody in the neighborhood probably has known that for a decade. Like, well, you know, there's something going on there. It's one of those kind of places. All right. So they pull up, and they're like, they're ready to go. They're ready to breach. Okay. They're all like in their set spots and stuff. They're going to come at it from all these different directions. And in the middle of all this, they wind up getting a hold of the dad of the dude. So the dude is the bad guy. The dad is just the dad. He's just a good dad. And the dad is like, oh, listen, before you guys breach, you've got to know there's like these really expensive exotic cats in there. And he's like, cats? Like house cats? Yeah, but they're like really expensive. Like, okay, what does that mean? Like, don't shoot them? No, don't let them out. Like, the dad's just a nice guy. It's his cats. The son is the guy that's the bad guy. And the dad is making a plea to the FBI, please don't let my expensive cats out. And so my friend's like, now they're trying to think about how do they take that into their tactical plan that they're going to like take this compound, okay? And so they're trying to figure it out, and they're doing everything they can, and they just do the absolute best they can, and the cats get out. The cats are now out of the compound, and they get things secure, and now my friend and all these FBI agents that are in full like SWAT gear, okay? They are all fully loaded up. Their job is to round up cats. And he's like, and we've got our comm system. And he said, and we're all coordinating efforts around this compound of, okay, oh, I see one, he's under this house. Oh, okay, you know, flank left. I mean, like all they're like, these FBI agents are trying to get these cats. And I was like, this is government money well spent here, folks. This is where our tax dollars is going, flanking cats at an enemy compound, okay? Anyway, they finally get them, and they have to, like, rope in more law enforcement. There's more law enforcement has to come and help them to get the cats than it did to lock down the place from the thing. The guy wasn't even home. The bad guy wasn't even home. They got all the stuff, and they, you know, got all the things that they needed to be able to prosecute him, and he's toast now. But they didn't even wind up getting the guy. They just get all these cats, and they get extra law enforcement and all this. And I was thinking about this, and I was like, no greater love, bro. No greater love. It's like, man, you went hard for that. For that old dude, for the dad, you know, trying to take care of him, and all these cats. These poor cats were going to be so lost and confused. They've never been outside before. They don't know what to do. And I was just like, man, that is just really funny to have found himself in that situation where he was aiming to do, like, his job, and then winds up in the middle of his job, this is the ever so light tie-in, ever in the midst of life, all of a sudden finds himself in a situation where now he's got to really go low and do something just so seemingly beneath him. And I was thinking about that in all the different ways that this go low, this lay down our lives for our friends things look. It's so often it's not planned. That's what I'm struck with that as one of the primary takeaways in my understanding of this verse, to lay down one's life for friends. It's so often it's not a planned situation. Of course, there are those moments that are planned. But so often you're just doing your thing. And a moment calls for it, or rather, a moment gives you the opportunity. A moment gives you the opportunity, but in your natural flesh, you're like, well, I'm in all of my tactical gear. It doesn't make sense for me to do that right now. I'm a this. It doesn't make sense for me to go that low and do that thing. You know, we're busy. We've got to get back and get all the paperwork done for this thing. And it's like, or you could just help the herd cats. And I was like, man, there are something about this laying our lives down that will sneak up on us, which is why we've kind of got to be premeditating and deciding in our heart that we're going to look for those opportunities and not let them pass us by when they present themselves to us. So here's the thing in this whole storyline of what it means to lay our lives down. It's not just for Jesus. It's for us too. It's not just a Jesus thing. He laid his life down as an example, and now it's for us. So let's look at what, you know, kind of two different versions of what it means to lay down our life. To literally die. That there are going to be those rare moments to literally die. But I'll even point this out. Jesus probably could have found a way, if he was trying, to die faster. He probably could have tried to find a way, an opportunity to die for his friends in a different context a week earlier or a year earlier. So there's even a timing thing of actually laying your literal life down unto death, no more, bye-bye you, that sort of a moment. Like, I want us to understand this Bible verse does mean that. It actually does mean physically perish for friends. And I think about, what does it take? Could I ever do that? What sort of situation would I have to be in where I'd look at you and I'd value your life more than mine and forfeit my life so that you could have life, or so that your situation would be better, or so that you weren't, you know, put in that same situation? Like, what, Lord, what kind of conversations do I need to have, start having with God where I could even get to a point where that would be fathomable? I'm just trying to be real and honest here. But I don't think I'm so far off from probably where everybody else is sitting too. What would it take? Not lay your life down for your spouse or your kid, your friend. While you have a spouse and a kid. Ooh. And the Lord says, there's no greater love. This is the supreme version of love. Wouldn't the supreme version of love been to take care of my wife and kid? I mean, like, this is really challenging. I propose to you, it's not looking for an opportunity to get this done tomorrow, but it's in the moment where it is the right thing, and those moments do exist in the human experience, though probably rare for us at current, in our current situation, in our current, you know, the tranquility that America experiences right now won't always be that way. It's probably a rare situation, but there's moments where it would actually be the right thing for a person to physically die for their friends. Wow. That just seems like really a hard saying, Jesus. I mean, it's fine for you to do it. You're the Messiah. But you said that's an example that you set that we should also lay our lives down for our friends? Well, I'll just say this. This just seems like easy math for me. There's no way we could possibly say yes to that level of sacrifice in the ultimate lay our life down and die. There's no way we could do that if we weren't already living a life of dying daily. There's no way. So let's bring it down a notch. And now let's talk about what probably will be the majority of the expression That's the vast minority. That is like the rarest of occasions. Even Jesus, the Son of God, only did it once, okay? And he waited until it was the right time. It was the right time. But the majority of the opportunities are going to be dying daily. Not dying once, but daily. It doesn't, we don't get out that quick, that easy. Look at what Paul says in Ephesians 5. So we were just looking at Ephesians 5, 1 through 2. This is the very next phrase in Ephesians 5. It says this: follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children, and walk in the way of love. Okay, walk in the way of love. Love each other deeply, we've been talking about that. What does it look like to walk in the way of love? Just as Christ loved us and gave himself up. The way to walk in the way of love is to do what Jesus did, but do it on the daily. So you couldn't possibly walk in the way of love, because the walk, it's like a long-term daily reality. Like, to walk in a way is not to do something once. So this idea of walking in the way of love, and what does it look like to walk in that way, is to be like Jesus, but to die again and again and again for our brothers, for our friends. This actually helps us to understand that this whole give our life up for our friends, give one's life up for one's friends thing, is not just a one-time deal. It is the way of love. It is the path. It is the way that we're actually instructed to live our lives. And that is infinitely more challenging when I think about it. Paul tells us that this is the way to walk in the way of love, is to give ourselves up for one another just as Christ gave himself up for us. Okay, now that, in one sense, it's easier, because I was going to really have a hard time dying for you tomorrow. I mean, Lord help me. Okay? But just to be real, it's going to be really tough for me to do that tomorrow. So in one sense, I'm like, okay, good. Good, I can still do the Bible and not have to die tomorrow. But then I go, oh, actually, maybe dying once is easier. Because it's like, to die again and again and again, it's like the infinite life code back on the Nintendo. It's like, man, we just keep putting ourselves through this over and over, death after death, and that this is defined as the way of love, that we would die for each other regularly, daily. Well, I can't think of too many ways to say it more simple, practical is the word I'm looking for. I can't think of a more practical way to address this. What does it look like to die daily, to lay our life down daily for one another, than 1 Corinthians 10, 23 through 24? This is just my take on it. I have the right to do anything, you say, but not everything is beneficial. I have the right to do anything, but not everything is constructive. No one should seek their own good, but the good of others. I'll say it this way, this is the practical takeaway in my mind. Laying aside your personal freedoms, your personal rights, rights that you are due, that you choose to forfeit. To forfeit personal rights that you're entitled to because of your age, your stature, your financial position, because of your citizenship, because you're whatever. I mean, like, whatever it is that you're entitled to those rights, you're entitled to them, to forfeit them for somebody else. So now it's not give up what's extra, it's give up what I'm due. Give up what is right for me to have. It's justice that this thing is mine and that it's not yours. But to lay our life down for one another, I just think it's a sacrifice of personal freedoms. It's a setting aside of the things that we're entitled to. That's tough. Because we just have such a self-focus of what I am entitled to. What is mine? And Paul says, you're right. You could do it. But it's not beneficial. I mean, you've got a right to that, but that doesn't help your brother. I mean, you're right. You don't need to do that thing, but it'd be better for your friend if you did. Oh, this is horrible. This is really hard. Maybe I just would rather die once and get it over with. To sacrifice our personal freedoms, to set them aside in order to help another, forfeiting your rights. I just think about that phrase for a second. Forfeiting your rights. I think about the Moravians back in Germany. The whole concept of the modern missions movement starting in their midst. And some of them, it's reported, would sell themselves into slavery in order to be able to bring the gospel to those that otherwise probably weren't going to hear the message of the gospel because they were so isolated from other different groups and things that they would never get that influence. So there would be people that would sell themselves into slavery and now as a slave with no rights would be able to minister to the people around. Like, that's as hardcore as it gets related to laying down your rights. Like, you had a right to be a German citizen or whatever, and now you're like, now I'm nobody, I've made myself nothing. To think about forfeiting rights. And then I'm really grateful that Jesus specifically said the word friends, to lay your life down for your friends, because it's those in closest proximity. It's those in nearest relationship. It's those that we see all the time, and to figure out, how do I lay down my preferences, my rights, my expression? You know, I found over the years, there are some things about the way I want to express myself that hurt people, that are offensive to people, that cause pain to people. And do I have a right to express myself? Maybe, but is it beneficial? I mean, to start thinking about the way that we express ourselves. I've just got a few more preference points. I'll just read you a few. These are just some thoughts as I had as I was kind of prepping this message, trying to figure out, you know, how am I doing and where's my heart and all this. Living a life of showing preference to others. I think this is a good starting point for us related to this. How do we lay our lives down? I think if we can start here in the area of preference, maybe we could grow up a little more, and graduate into something beautiful one day. Giving someone the better portion, the better seat, the better option, the better choice, giving them the better. Yeah, I have a right to it, or maybe we both have equal rights to it. But to give up that better. Oh my gosh, that's a cute idea until you start making it real. And you start looking at, well, what's that? Yeah, but I want that. And I should have that. It's my birthday. I mean, I want that. It's my birthday. That's mine. And I just think we're all like a bunch of little kids. Like, because I just think we think that way. We're just so entitled. We're so entitled. Mine. And Paul's like, well, it could be yours. I mean, you're entitled to it. It's permissible for you to do it that way. But is it beneficial to them? Ugh. Letting someone else choose. I don't know, maybe most of these are just my little world. Maybe you can make better questions for yourself or better ideas. But letting someone else choose. Yeah, but I want to choose. My turn. I just think about my kids fighting over who gets to sit in the back or has to sit in the back. It's like, I want to sit up there. I want to sit in the front. And it's like letting someone else choose, even though it's your turn to choose, even though it's your position to choose, even though it's your prerogative to choose, to let someone else choose. A way to show preference. Hearing out an opposing idea or an opposing opinion. I just think it's so normal for us to not think about somebody else's perspective. What if we started hunting for someone else's perspective? Instead of, we've got our perspective. We've got one that we're set on. And we're not really even interested in hearing somebody else's perspective. What if instead we made a point to hear someone else's perspective? to hear what their thoughts are on something, especially when it's an opposing idea. Instead of trying to force our way, I don't know, I feel like it's something that the Lord's really been putting his finger on me about the last couple of years, is not forcing my way, forcing my will. This is what I want, this is what I think, therefore, I'm going to push it. Yieldedness. It's a tough one, though. Waiting on others. I just think about how that touches us in so many ways. Whether it's we're waiting on somebody to go so we can go do the thing. We're waiting on somebody to grow up so we can do the thing. We're waiting on somebody to deal with their issue so we can do the thing. Just this idea of waiting on others. Not waiting on God, not waiting on life. Waiting on a person. If that person would just have this thing happen faster, my life would be better. If they could just move, either in the car so we can leave, or in their life so we can do this, or overcome this issue, or just waiting. Just waiting on people. And doing it with a posture of humility and not aggression. Like, I'm just pretty sure we lose any brownie points from the Lord. For like, well, I'm waiting. Yeah, but you're cursing them all day long in your mind. If they could just get going. And the Lord's like, yeah, come on. Grow up. But I think about this idea of showing preference. What if my speed is this and their speed is this? At whatever it is in life, to show preference to their speed. Oh, gosh, this is crucifixion. And I think if we'll dial down, the Lord would go, it's a pleasing offering to me. Not saying things we have the right to say. Oh, Lord, and especially in our Instagram world, the social media reality of every version of say what you're thinking. What if one of the greatest ways we could show preference to others is to not say what we have the right to say unless it's actually beneficial? We haven't learned that one. We just say whatever we think. If it comes to mind, we just say it. In different settings. It's like, man, what if showing preference looked like holding our tongue for the benefit of another? Yeah, but if I say this, I'll feel better. But how will the other person feel? Well, they'll feel slightly worse, but I'll feel significantly better. I mean mine. Oh, Jesus, this is going to kill us. This is going to kill us. If we do it, it's going to kill us. To not say what we're thinking, unless it's beneficial. I mean, we do have some parameters. If it's noble, excellent, praiseworthy, pleasing, you know, if it's beneficial to others, well, then great. That's all free game. But there's a lot of stuff that comes out of our mouths that isn't. I've been catching myself lately. Because this series, I'll tell you, it is messing with me. I hope you're miserable like I am. This is really messing with me because I'm like, I am not sure I'm saved. Like, am I a real Christian? Because this is how we know what love is. Lay down our life for our friends. I'm like, I am really getting messed with. I have found lately there are moments where I'm like, I want to say this. I have the right to say this. This is my perspective on this issue. This is how I think. This is how I see it. And I'm challenged to ask myself the question, will it benefit them? No, it'll probably just be me voicing my opinion. Okay, is it possible that it could harm them? Yeah, I guess that is possible. Then why in the world would you open your mouth and say it? Because I mean mine. Lord, I mean mine. Me. And the Lord's like, I mean, you can say it, two-year-old. But the mature would hold their tongue and would figure out a way to love instead of voice their opinion. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really... Some questions to maybe leave with today. Maybe one of these questions, I don't know that all of them will hit you. Maybe one of them would. How can I give myself to others? Starting to just ask yourself that question. What would that look like? Because I think if we'll start thinking about it, when we find ourselves in a situation that's at least adjacent to the one we imagined, we might actually be able to act on it. Whereas a lot of times if we find ourselves in a situation we've not thought about it at all, we're so caught off guard by it that we're doing our best to not remember the sermon. But just asking ourselves the question, how can I give myself to others? Here's one. This is just a practical, because that whole Jesus said, lay your life down for your friends, the ones you're in closest relationship with. How can I serve the greater good of this church? I mean, for sure, that's a question that's inbounds in this conversation. How can I serve the good of this church? What? Maybe it's something I don't even want to do. How can I serve the greater good of this church? I'll just say this. There are infinite opportunities to walk out laying your life down for your friends in this context that will be the easiest versions you can come up with. This will be the easiest place to do it. Easier than with your family. There's just family dynamics that make that challenging. The easiest place you can do it is actually in this church. To try to figure out how do you lay your life down for your friends? How do you show preference? Because they all heard this sermon too, and they'll have mercy on you while you're doing it. I mean, it's like, this is actually like the easiest playground you're going to find. What does it look like to serve the greater good of this church? How can I show preference to those around me? Just start asking yourself the question, what would that look like? Maybe you start simple. You know, instead of yelling shotgun, you yell not gun. It's like, just you on purpose, never take, you know, always. I mean, just start wherever you start. Just start thinking that way. What sacrifice is needed from me for someone else's success or someone else's benefit? This person would be more successful, they would be benefited if someone would do this for them. Ugh. What would that cost me to be that person? What sacrifice is needed for someone else's success or someone else's benefit? What part of my life can I give up for my friends? What part of my life that maybe you're not already giving up, maybe it's something you really don't want to give up? Just ask yourself the question, if you dare. Ask the Lord, what part of my life could I give up for my friends? How can I stand for the good of those in my small group? You're all in small groups. That's the most micro version of this church. That's the most smallest pocket puddle of this church, the people that you're running with. What does it look like to stand for the good of those in your small group? What could you do or not do? What could you say or not say? What could you be about or not be about? What could you fight for or fight against for someone else in your small group? I mean, really, I just pray that you're as miserable as I am. I just really, really hope that you all go home and cry, because these are really challenging ideas. I mean, it's one thing to hear it preached. It is quite another to actually go and have these conversations with Jesus. And I want to encourage you to do it.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.